Hello, friends. We are continuing now with the six stages of discipleship found in the last section of Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1. And it's really an important section. Now, I've already done it in a written form, and you can get that on Makara, but you know, the more spontaneous form is what I'm working on right now, and maybe some of you will find that useful. As far as the image goes here, I'm sorry that it's sort of light and dark. It has to do with the way the light comes here into the temple. We closed with program number 8, and we talked about the learning of 3 important lessons, which would lead to the disciple becoming the initiate. And, you know, some of these are a little bit hard to absorb because we don't suspect this of ourselves. The first one, the recognition that we share all human tendencies, all, good and bad. And hence, because of that, we are able to serve. Because our service is not just to the people that we may like or that see things the same way that we do. The service is I'll get a little closer here. Service is something more. Then comes the discovery, and this is a hard one to digest because so often we project and blame the other person. The discovery that the thing which we most despise and fears and fear is the thing which exists most strongly in him, but which is as yet unrecognized. It's something akin to the law of repulse. We are unconsciously repelling as if these traits were in other people, traits which are most strong and disagreeable within ourselves. So that can become an asset when we learn to fear nothing. You know, the Tibetan drops little hints here. He says, the disciple learns not just that he is in all things or can relate to all things. The disciple learns he is all things. Now, that's a profound occult achievement. And I've been trying to emphasize that in the Identify as Being group of courses. So eventually he can master all the different states of awareness. The third point, the general uselessness of past attitudes, even though they may be comfortable, and dogmatic ways of looking at life and people. so many of us are frozen concrete-mindedly in our dogmatism. And he says it's here based upon tradition and circumstance, I suppose, in which we have been raised. So, you know, in general, it's the uselessness of anything that is spawned from the great heresy of separateness, the one true heresy. So that's a little bit of the segue into the new section that we'll be dealing with. And DK sums it up by saying, well, when he, the disciple, the cognizant, perspicacious, self-seeing disciple, has really learned these three things, he is initiate. It might be agreeable to us to say, well, we are all the good things in other people, but we are the bad too. The throne, you know, has the feet of the dragon. So, you know, our whole evolution has been based on some pretty violent arisings. And when the dinosaurs, first ray animals, by and large, were walking the earth, who is to say that their very rapacious first ray violent nature, at least for so many of them, was not also what we are. So, you know, we become inclusive, ever more inclusive, and we learn how to include what is apparently the bad in terms of the plan, as well as the good. And that way we don't divide ourselves from others. So that was the end of program 8. Took place a little while ago, a few days ago. Like I say, I just wish my pace could be better. But I'm doing what I can in the condition I'm in. And intend to keep going as long as I can. Now, this is part 4. And basically, we're on page 709. This is the 5th of June, 21, program number 8, number 9, SXSD, 6 Stages of Discipleship video commentary. We're going to learn so much here, you know, even though we may have read it once, may have read it twice, more, the value of what is given is just extraordinary and gives us the way of living the discipleship life, which opens out into the initiatic state. Every true disciple is preparing for or being prepared for an initiation. So he goes on. As we study the various stages of discipleship through which all must pass. You know, there's, as eager as we may be, there's no skipping over necessary grades, gradations, requirements. We shall discover that one of the things which happens is the irradiation of daily life. I mean, when we're ready to change kingdoms, or when a member of any particular kingdom is ready to go into the next kingdom, a state that in the human being we call irradiation occurs in that transitional phase for the members of the other kingdoms. So that's really important. We live a much more light, radiating life. This irradiation emanates from the world of meaning. Well, that's the world of the soul, isn't it? In which the disciple is learning to live consciously and always, not just a lucky entrance once in a while, which is not predictable. So constant irradiation or increasing of our radiation. This is to be expected and accompanies the progress through the different stages which all of us must make. I mean, this is a science, friends. And when you have a master like Master DK, who is really willing to take time imparting this science and looking over the personal lives of so many students, even though he said he would really deal with souls. Well, of course, he's dealing with souls. But at the same time, I don't know if it came as a surprise to him or if Alice Bailey convinced him of what needed to be done. But he gave eventually a lot of attention to the personal condition of his disciples, even his accepted disciples, even, you know, suggesting things like exercise and how much one eats or does not eat, how well one treats the body, or how strictly in an unnecessary manner. So a man of great experience, willing to spend time with the likes of us. One of the problems with which the master is engaged in relation to his group of disciples is to teach them the deep significance of the familiar. I mean, when the familiar ceases to be familiar, then we're really making some progress. And also the importance of the truths which underlie the platitudes. Now I've got to somehow get my... I have a little trouble here. I don't know why. And I can't move my mouse. Okay, come on now. Hell, it's not working so well, is it? Okay. And I can't turn anything off as I would like to do. I can't stop the recording, and I can't operate with the recording. Well, this is interesting. Anyway, maybe there'll be a way to go on. One of the problems with which the master is engaged is to teach them the deep significance of that which is familiar. Okay. And I'm sorry for the delay here. For some reason, this just isn't working. Okay, looks like I found a receptacle that's going to work, and let's see if I can turn things around. Okay, death test. Looks like I can. And I'm sorry for the little hiatus here. Sometimes it's just difficult. Okay, now we're coming back to with something manageable. Well, what are the truths behind the platitudes? Because it's easy to spout platitudes, but to really sense the truth upon which they are based. I mean, when a platitude no longer becomes a platitude, but a true realization, not just something repeated because you've heard it so many times or it's convenient to repeat, but something more, a real realization, then we're into the realm of truth and soul knowledge. DK says this is perhaps the most difficult task of all, because the habitual reaction to the familiar and the need to do two things. Okay, so I'm going to see if this all works now, friends. I've decided on the somewhat informal approach here. If I try to be too formal and too perfect, this will never get out to you. So this is perhaps the most difficult task of all because of the habitual reaction to the familiar, which is just to assume you know all about it when you don't, and the need to do two things. Prove that the familiar veils an important reality, and that by penetrating into the world of meaning, the world of the soul, remember, how should we put it, the world of phenomena, the lower 18 subplanes, the world of meaning, the world of the soul, the world of significance, the world of the triad, the world of being, the monadic world, and the logoic plane is also a world of being, but a world of ultimate causes, with respect to the cosmic physical plane. Prove that the familiar veils an important reality. Prove it to yourself. And that by penetrating through much stillness and keen discernment. Remember, spiritual discernment being the quality that we encounter on the third subplane of the mental plane, third from above, that by penetrating into the world of meaning, the disciple discovers that he can enter into the first stage of preparation for accepted discipleship. So let's just say this must be done in most cases during the interval between the first and second initiations, because that, it seems, where the seems to be where the accepted disciple gains his status and is recognized by the master. Okay. Sometimes I don't know, you know, whether to write out a bunch of stuff or whether you can kind of pick it up by the words that I say. Obviously, it goes along a little more rapidly if I can don't have to write out my conclusions. The first stage, which we must study, now he's going to get into the six stages and maybe even finally seven stages, but it's a very, very different type of disciple that we encounter in the sixth and seventh stages. It's the initiate disciple, and even finally, the status of master in this stage called the blending of the lights, which is the seventh stage. The first stage which we must study is that of little chelaship. In dealing with this stage, as with all of them, I would remind you that I am approaching the subject from what the master has to do, and not from the angle of the disciple's work. He says there has been so much written on that subject from the angle of the disciple, and so many books put out on the subject, that familiarity with the theme, see, that's the problem, militates against true apprehension. We become quite satisfied with what we think we know when we haven't penetrated and we don't know much at all. The effort to understand has been focused upon the disciple and his problems of character and personality. And, you know, DK did have to deal with that too. And in the beginning, he just said, look, I'm going to speak to you as souls and so forth. But when he discovered the condition, or further discovered it, in which his his students found themselves, well, he had to do what was necessary. Sometimes you have plans, But you discover that the condition of those you seek to help requires something else, something that you may have considered to be a preliminary stage. So this is a preliminary stage. Now, so he's taking it from the point of view of the master, which obviously we would not know about if unless he imparted it, because he is a master and we are not. We maybe know it much better from our own point of view, but our understanding will be enhanced if we understand what the master has to deal with. It will not be possible for me to indicate the work of the master in detail. I intend to show you as far as is possible, because not all details are possible, how a master prepares the probationer to step off or step from off the probationary path and onto the path of discipleship. Now, you know, I think it might be said from one perspective, the stage of probationer abuts the stage of accepted discipleship. From another point of view, we might say that, the terminology is mutable, flexible. If we can say that every true aspirant has taken the first initiation, is that aspirant a disciple? Is that aspirant a first degree initiate? I think the goal here basically is to be established in a kind of probationary discipleship which seeks to fulfill the requirements of accepted discipleship. Some of Master DK's students did not do that, and they had to be, in a sense, dropped or excluded from the group. The new esoteric seed group, which was a new experiment in, I think, 1939, 1940. So many of these people had, in the words of Master DK, reached their high watermark. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, in all truth, but realizing that we may not necessarily be able to determine it, whether we have reached our high watermark, or whether further development is possible. I remember when I lived in Fargo, North Dakota, the so-called Red River would flood annually, and sometimes very badly. And on some markers, which were like sort of bridges, or at least they were concrete sort of structures, various high water marks would be noted. written down, shown, and maybe the years of those marks. And then, of course, there would be, after the flood season, a subsiding of the water. And, you know, it may be that way for human life. How far can we really go? Is it possible to go still further than we have gone? I suppose, you know, it's always possible, but is it probable? Is it likely? Anyway, how does the Master really prepare the aspiring probationary disciple to step onto the path of true discipleship, which here it looks like it's quite, I want a different color. It looks like accepted discipleship. At this point, I would like to point out that I shall be dealing with a period covering the stages of discipleship, from the first stage to that of the adept. Now, at the seventh stage, the disciple is an adept. Let's see what he says here about the fourth stage, which is that of Chela on the thread. At the fourth stage, the disciple emerges out of his master's group and becomes what is esoterically called a fixed aspect of the hierarchy. This is interesting. The master's group is somewhat peripheral, standing on the periphery of the ashram. Looks like something quite different is going to occur here at the fourth stage. You know the stages: little chelaship, chela in the light, accepted discipleship, chela on the thread, chela in the aura, chela in the master's heart, and this seventh and obscure stage, which we call the blending of the lights. So a fixed aspect of the hierarchy, in a way, even probationary disciples are within that big blue circle that we have on one of our charts. But he says still, this is the stage which is, and we can't avoid it, necessarily quite meaningless to you. That means we can't help the fact that it is meaningless so far. He comes then under the influence of Shambhala. And the mode of preparing people for association with that first major center is very different from that of preparing them for participation in the work of the center we call the hierarchy. Okay, an important distinction here. You know, when I think about it, it strikes me that it would be the stage of Chela in the aura that we are talking about, but that is the fifth stage and not the fourth. The one involves the development of love and of group consciousness. The Christ is saying, no man cometh to the Father except through me. I mean, but very concretely interpreted. Not taking into consideration the Christ consciousness, but simply emotional belief. The other involves the unfoldment of the will and the attainment of the stage to which Patanjali, the great sage of Raja Yoga, to which Patanjali gives the name isolated unity. Well, let's just say something is known. Oops, sorry. Something is known at the third degree, but far more fully at the fifth degree. So are we then saying that when we have the stage of Chela on the thread, that we are already beginning to absorb something from Shambhala? Are we saying that? It seems so. I think that still has to be clarified. But isolated unity is, again, something we are attempting to pursue in our work of identify as being. That doesn't mean we've taken the third degree, but at least we're on our way and are thinking in terms of focus within the soul and of making the antikarana effective. It is the unity which is isolated. It is not various aspects within that unity which are isolated. It's we get the sense of the whole, and even finally, I would say at the fifth degree, of the oneness of things, an inviolable oneness. That doesn't happen immediately. But you know, when you start to look around and you see so many emanations and constructions, there comes a time when they all begin to look like the same thing. You're looking at all directions, at all the parts and pieces, and you somehow begin to realize it is one thing. It is being itself. Every example of being is essentially being itself. And that's a really different relationship to things, to the great jigsaw, we might say. Now, this isolated unity, he emphasizes it, and sometimes he says, well, it's not really the best phrase. But here he says, this is a phrase which is quite meaningless to anyone below the degree of the third initiation. I think the great Vedantists, the Brahmins, the Vedists, the ones who wrote the Upanishads, obviously, so many of them had achieved this state, not only in its initial indications, but the higher aspects of this state, which I consider the prerogative of the master. Okay, well, is it meaningless? We have to decide what is our relationship to this phrase, isolated unity. What is our relationship to it? It would be a really significant attainment, even if just a little flicker could come to us. And maybe, you know, it involves the heart center where the life aspect is said to be focused. And that life aspect is being. So, look, if you find a way to induce this realization of oneness as being, I'm taking it even further than saying oneness in being, I'm saying oneness as being, use it as a point of reference. I do. There are certain visualizations that I use, they mean something to me. And I find that the ability to slip into oneness as being, even if in just the very preliminary stages, is enhanced by using those visualizations. And then, if I'm fortunate, on a good day, I can transfer the realization that I have using my specific visualizations to other visualizations and to other presences until I become the presence within the presences. It's a really subtle thing that we are asked to do. And it's hard to describe in words, but it is doable. Obviously, all the masters who have a large measure of triadal consciousness and are perfecting that and entering somewhat into monadic awareness, they have done this. And what the human being has done, the human being can do. So in this discussion, says the Tibetan, I shall not be dealing with preparation for the various initiations and their specific differences? Well, he did that quite a bit in a apparently very preliminary book, Initiation, Human and Solar. I shall be dealing with the growth of what is called ashramic intimacy. That's another one of those terms that we have to think very acutely concerning. I mean, we use that word intimacy on such a physical level, but now we're talking about the shared soul state, the shared triadal state. We're talking about something which is beyond any kind of intimacy we can conceive in the three worlds. So I shall be dealing with the growth of what is called ashramic intimacy with the approach of the disciple to the world of souls and to the unfoldment of his consciousness in relation to hierarchy, to the hierarchy. You can just tell how all of this turns on the slightest change of perception, or as I would call it, infuception. I shall be concerned with his growth in sensitivity and his subsequent or consequent and consequent growth in creativity. The two seem related here. Not the creativity of form as much as the creativity of vibration. Being able to select points of tension that are useful in certain circumstances and to apply them. The creativity of vibration, its impact upon the world of men, and the consequent later appearance of responsive organisms in contradistinction to created forms. Much to ponder there. He always is advising us to choose the organism over the organization. So let's deal with this idea, ashramic intimacy. And I would say it's a great theme for meditation. It just turns on the slightest change of perception. I would say from normal discriminative perception to this something far more inclusive that I've been calling infuception. Okay. And yes, he is asking us, please reflect upon this thought. Through our sensitivity our creativity of vibration, we will go far in being able to create responsive organisms in the world rather than those rather dead, concrete-minded types of forms. We just need to be entirely more fluid and more subtle in our perception, our imperception of these matters. Unless perceptions are infused with the deep sense of being, we have not really understood their origin. Let's see what DK has to say about there's a lot here, of course, more than one normal size program. This growth in sensitivity is difficult to understand. The members of a master's group, remember that's more peripheral, right? And of his ashram, have to become increasingly sensitive. Sensitive to the master, and to his pledged workers. You cannot be made sensitive or rendered. Sensitive by some type of process or ordered training. Men and women are sensitive, only they do not know it, being so preoccupied with outer matters. So it's a bit like uncovering what is already there and letting it flourish. He says the same of telepathy. Men and women are naturally telepathic, but there are things blocking that natural telepathy. They're so preoccupied with outer matters, with form life and objective things. So a great deal of what he is trying to induce in us is really already there. If we could only rid ourselves, unveil, rid ourselves of the obstructions, we have to have that kind of confidence that we could rid ourselves of those obstructions. He goes on, let me put it this way. What you say to yourself and to others through your spoken words or your life is so noisy, you know, that's discordant vibration, that it is not easy to be what you are, and to be recognized as a spiritual being. So we cover ourselves with non-essentials. But I guess fortunately, right? The master is guided by what he knows of you in your quiet moments of aspiration, by what you have demonstrated for years to be your fixed life tendency, and by the manner in which you react at moments of crisis and tension. Fortunately, the master has great discernment and is not misled by our noisier, veiled moments, which are preoccupation with the forms of the three worlds makes almost inevitable. But finally, you know, be still and know that I am God. Well, you can interpret that in a lot of ways, but the stillness has to do with the reduction of discordant vibration. And who is the I who is God? Is it God who is something else, or is it that I am God? Once these veils are lifted and once the rents in the veiling fabric are torn. So quiet aspiration, fixed life tendency, and maybe most difficult, the moments of crisis or tension. The task of the master is to stimulate the disciple to be at all times what he, the master, knows him to be at his highest times. That is a simple and almost childish way of putting it, but it serves to express the general idea. So remember, we're looking at what is the task of the master as he works to make the probationary disciple the true disciple, and the true disciple the initiate, largely taking away the layers of obstruction. The task of the master is to stimulate the disciple to be at all times what he, the master, knows him to be at his highest times. We certainly do have a range of points of tension, and some are much higher than others. If we could only sustain the high points of tension. Well, this is a simple and almost childish way of putting it, but it serves to express the general idea. And who knows, in our particular condition, sometimes the almost childish presentation can be the one that gets gets through to us and helps us understand. Why does the master do this? A master does this because the need of the world for decentralized, forward-looking, loving, and intelligent workers is so great, particularly at this time. That forward-looking part, I think, has a lot to do with will, because he oftentimes lists the various aspects of divinity sequentially. But of all things, let us not overestimate ourselves. Let us not be the beginners or fall into the trap that beginners fall into and become conceited, thinking too much of ourselves and of our status, and always comparing our status with those of others and with our own expectations. Many have reached the point where they may become sensitive if the loud assertions of personality are dimmed and the light of the soul is permitted to pour through. Now, this is such a Gemini. I recognize my other self, the personal self, I standing within the higher light, and in the waning of that lower self, in the waning of that self, I grow, I the soul, grow and glow. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. In the song I made about this, I used the word see instead of recognize. Recognize would be more accurate, and see was a word that was easier to use musically. So we can, many of us, become naturally sensitive if finally the loud assertions of the personality are dimmed. We're dealing with both light and sound. And the light of the soul is permitted to pour through. It's there, ready to pour through. And we'll know when that happens. Just read the end of chapter one in A Treatise on White Magic, and you will see all of the various attempts which the Angel of the Presence, basically, uses to try to uplift its personality. You will see them and maybe recognize them in your life. Then the Master can be known and contacted. When you can get away from yourselves and your personal reactions, your own interpretations, to which you hold steadfastly and in some cases even vehemently, and your personal demands, demands for the personality, you will discover for yourselves how and in what manner the master is seeking to impress you. And the group with which you may be affiliated. Let's just say that this is promising. And tells the way that many have traveled. And all really must travel. When we get out of our own way, when we identify with the angel in us, with the master in us, with the extension of the monad in our soul self, then the master can be known and contacted. And the personal fragment of our life is much reduced, and the spiritual counterpart much increased. I recognize my other self, and in the waning of that self, I grow and glow. You will be sensitive to that impression, to the master's impression, and you can then facilitate, as it is called, the activity of the master by a profound and deep interest in the esoteric life, to the exclusion of your own and also of the master's individuality. All the personal elements, the individual elements, begin to take a secondary position. There are many ways which can then be revealed, which will aid the interplay between you, the disciple, and the master. So this tells of our impending training, and it's something that we either have gone through or must go through. And you might, you know, ask yourself, how much have I succeeded in this? And over the course of my life, this particular incarnation, has there been more sensitivity to the master, to my fellow ashramic group members, or even ashramic members? What has grown in me? And do I really know the vibration, or do I just know the words? We can, of course, become experts regarding glib responses using words. We can do that. But it's not the same as knowing the vibration. And I mean knowing the vibration. So it looks here like we are on page 711. Just a little bit, that's all we've done. And I hope my delivery is not too devoid of breath. And so that nor too slow nor too fast. And I'll pick it up here as soon as I can, with program number 10. I'll tell you, after years and years of studying this material, when I'm preparing it for you, I'm learning something all the time and absorbing what I did not absorb before. So this is end of 9, and we'll be starting with program 10, and we'll be starting on page 711. And it's difficult to know whether I can, I would love to, carry this on a little later today, if I could, or tonight. And reading it all, you know, as if I'm reading it in a way for the first time, so that a new type of impression is landing, shall we say, in my consciousness. And I don't take for granted formulations which I may have made before, but something new comes. I'm remembering some old Americana quasi-gospel song from the 19th century. In Christ is something new. And if we could just read in such a way that that something new appears to us. In the Tibetan is always something new as well. And in the true truth of things behind the platitudes is something new. And our spirit is refreshed when we encounter the new. So, you know, it's quite a joy to read in depth and attempt to absorb what the Tibetan has presented to us. And this is a really valuable section. I mean, he has told us, look, we can't absorb it all. Kind of a second-rate drug, absorb it all. But okay, we cannot absorb it all. Our mind cannot travel over the planet and into all aspects of the solar system and beyond. We're just limited in that way. We can't do that. But we can learn a few things, and they can help us live the life of discipleship, aspirational, probationary discipleship, and carry us into the Master's group through accepted discipleship and eventually into the true status of initiation, where everything is revealed. Eventually, we were veiled, and a great unveiling takes place, and we discover our true internal abilities, which have always been there, but have been blocked by, he's using the word loud, he's using the word noise, noisy, which makes me think of discord and lack of harmony and schism and separativeness. Those things will lift. And then always and with consistency, we will be present in the world of the soul. Okay, friends, so if I can, I'll get to a little more today. In the old days, I was able to just go hours and hours. But for various reasons, I seem not to be able to do that anymore. But I will persist, offering as much as I can under the circumstances. So, love and many blessings from Tuya and me, and from all who are attempting to bring to you the light of the ageless wisdom, which can be, and I think is, the great salvation of humanity, will be proven to be a vital ingredient in the salvation of humanity. So I'll stop the recording and get this sent out to you. BL will put it up on Makara, and Harold, I think, will put it up on our YouTube channel. And if you miss some of these and you want to take advantage of them, then it's available to you. Okay, lots of love, and see you then.